Hello, on this week's program, David Patrick Stearns takes us to two new Shakespeare productions, Othello at the Opera Company of Philadelphia and Macbeth at the Wilma Theatre, as Philadelphia's Rosenbach Museum and Library hosts its annual Dracula Festival. Susan Lewis considers Bram Stoker's famous vampire and his impact on contemporary culture. That's all ahead this morning, creatively speaking.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.
And alongside me this morning is Susan Lewis. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, even the familiar will yield something new when you open your mind to discovery. It's one of the founding principles, I guess, of all kinds of artistic endeavor. And that's why new recordings come out every year of the classics that have been with us for centuries. WRTI brings you these wonderful recordings from years past and the latest, newest interpretations from today's best performers. Our vast and diverse collection of recordings has been built with the financial assistance of our dedicated member listeners. Won't you become one of those member listeners now? Become a financial donor to WRTI for the music it brings you, for the programming it brings you, for the connection it gives you to the music and to the arts. Please call 1-866-809-9784, 1-866-809-9784, or donate online at wrti.org.
And we've all heard the old saying a million times, it couldn't be easier. But in the case of contributing to WRTI, it's really true. Pledge by phone. The number is 1-866-809-9784, 1-866-809-9784. You'll be connected to someone who can help you make your pledge. It's easy, it's fast, and with your contribution, WRTI will continue to provide you with the finest classical music and jazz programming. Giving online at WRTI.org is easier still. So no matter how you do it, you'll be supporting great music and arts programming. Go online at WRTI.org or call 1-866-809-9784. It's your choice. Whichever way you choose, we ask you to do it now.
And the music on WRTI brings value to your life, even when you're not listening. Consider how much of the music you discovered on WRTI that now lives in, I know, your record collection, your CD library, or even on your iPod. Think about how many times you go and see a live performance of music you know or you're familiar with or that you've heard and come to love through WRTI. The music you hear here helps you make connections that enrich your life. Listener support keeps WRTI connected to you. Please give as generously as you can right now by making a phone call, 1-866-809-9784. It'll take just a couple of minutes. It'll take a very, very small amount of your overall annual household budget to make sure that this music can keep coming to you. But we rely on you. Individual donations. 1-866-809-9784. Make the call right now or go online to WRTI.org.
Pledge online at WRTI.org. And the phone number again is 1-866-809-9784. You're listening now. We're asking that you take a step from being a listener to being a member. Make a contribution to support the music you love. You decide the amount. A contribution in the amount that's comfortable for you will provide essential support for WRTI and ensure that the music will be here for years to come. Make your pledge online at WRTI.org or by phone at 1-866-809-9784.
And you know, most of the money that WRTI relies on comes from WRTI listener members. And we don't expect any one or even any 100 listeners to carry that load. In fact, we're glad that the bulk of our budget comes from thousands of listeners just like you. It makes for a more stable business model, and more importantly, it means that thousands of people are telling us that the programming they get from WRTI is what they want to hear in the year to come, because that's what your donation today will do. It will ensure that WRTI has the money it needs to pay for the programs you like to listen to. Do it now. Become a new member if you've never been a member before. If you don't remember if you've recently renewed, well, we can give you that information over the phone. Many people who become first-time listeners start at the $50 level. That's less than a dollar a week. Not a very heavy load at all. The most important thing you can do right now is go to the phone and call 1-866-809-9784, 1-866-809-9784, or online at WRTI.org.
The number again is 1-866-809-9784. If you're listening, please take that next step from listener to supporting member. 1-866-809-9784.
Though Shakespeare's plays have been in existence for roughly 400 years, they continue to claim firsts. The Wilma Theatre season of typically modern theatre opens with its first ever Shakespeare play, Macbeth. Across Broad Street at the Academy of Music, the Opera Company of Philadelphia opened last night in its first Othello, Verdi's adaptation of Shakespeare's Othello. As the Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns now reports, Shakespeare's stories tell of how far the mighty can fall and how many people they can take with them.
Here we are in front of the Wilma Theatre, where some fairly ominous sounds emanating from loudspeakers are ambushing passersby on Broad Street. They're the sounds that characterize the dark heart of Macbeth, Shakespeare's tale of murder upon murder upon murder on the throne of medieval Scotland. Such music might be hard to imagine, even among the most seasoned audiences for Shakespeare. But then, the Wilma Theatre is a haven for current cutting-edge drama, into which Macbeth seems to fit quite easily, with its depictions of ultra-violence, to borrow a term from The Clockwork Orange, and a stage full of ghosts and witches. That famous witch speech about fair is foul and foul is fair will be chanted to composer Pavel Feit's blanket of electronically generated sound.
Fair is foul and foul is fair. Fair is foul and foul is fair.
Director Blanka Ziska.
I'm actually taking them as women who are living at the very outskirts of society, who, you know, through the war probably were abused, and for some reason they have been expelled from the society. I don't know what that is exactly, if it's syphilis or losing too many children or for some specific reasons, and we talked about it with the actresses and everybody had made their own choice.
That sets the tone for Ziska's social realistic Macbeth. All the characters are interpreted in a social context that's updated somewhere around the mid-20th century.
I think that a lot of people think about the play as being a personal story of Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, and I really see it more as a play that has political consequences.
The play doesn't just accommodate such an approach. The secondary characters, whose lines are frequently cut down to streamline the play, suddenly take on a greater sense of purpose. They're part of a larger landscape that makes the Macbeths who they are, and bringing that landscape to life requires so many different elements that Blanka Ziska feels like she's directing an opera.
There is 20 people in it. And in addition to that, I have original music. I have Brian Sanders, who is doing original choreography for The Witches. I have fight choreographer. Usually you don't need all this.
And actors who only act. Here, sound designer Daniel Perlstein rehearses them in a choral passage that will herald a royal entrance. Opera is exactly what's being produced across the street, with as many instrumentalists as the Academy Music Orchestra pit can hold, a full chorus, plus soloists, in a depiction of the oldest crime in the world, the crime of passion. As easy as it is for some to think that Shakespeare plays are a world of flowery, formal language and action that's as deliberate as a chess game, Othello, whether in the Shakespeare original or the great Verdi adaptation, is not a place for the slightest hesitation. Tenor Clifton Forbus, who sings the title role in the Opera Company of Philadelphia's production, says he's looking forward to his imposing and often feared Act One entrance, the one that frightened Luciano Pavarotti away from the role for most of his career.
I absolutely love that moment. That being said, it either works or it doesn't at that point. And I think if you're worried about coming out to make your initial impression, you're not going to make a good one. Does that make sense?
The biggest problem for Robert Driver, who is directing Otello, is to make the audience hope that the story will somehow turn out differently, that Otello will come to his senses and realize there's absolutely no foundation to accusations of his wife's infidelity. This time, perhaps, the beautiful, innocent Desdemona, who goes to sleep draped in her wedding veil, won't die.
You always have to have that hope. Had one word or one phrase been different, the whole thing could have turned another way. Otello comes in, and I have him come in, you know, ready for business, ready to do the deed, right? To approach her and kill her, and he stops. It is the veil and seeing the veil that stops him. And then I have him take the veil and caress it and smell it and feel it. I have him lay it out on her and kiss her and lie down next to her. And if she had not awakened, the way we've staged it is that he would have gone to sleep embracing her.
The fragility of civilization is the common thread in these two productions. As a native Czech whose world has been invaded by a number of outside cultures, Ziska drew on modern political upheavals. From the disintegration of Yugoslavia, she takes the idea that people who were once friends and neighbors suddenly feel compelled to kill each other. She was particularly moved by accounts of post-World War II Berlin and how the most basic infrastructure broke down.
Because they have lost electricity, they have lost gas, you know, and none of these objects that make the world civilized exist any longer, and all that you can focus on is, you know, how you what do you put into your mouth. This supposedly German, a very high cultural civilization, is moving back in time to cave dwellers. And to me, there was a kind of an amazing idea of combining ancient time with modern time, which I wanted to do with this play.
Thus, Ziska arrives at an external explanation of how a character as intelligent as Macbeth can be reduced to a shark-like creature who will murder anybody who gets in his way, not unlike Joseph Stalin. The eternal relevance of Shakespeare is as disturbing as it is astounding. These plays are the primary mythology of the English-speaking world. The ancient Greek myths tell us how to deal with gods and nature. The sacred literature of the ages tell us what we must do to get into heaven. But the secular mythology of Shakespeare tells us how we get along with each other. In Shakespeare's comedies, the characters eventually do the right thing, albeit clumsily, and maybe with the help of some Midsummer Night's Dream fairy dust. But dramas such as Othello and Macbeth are about how badly the human race fares with itself. Not until all is lost do the characters realize how tragically wrong they are, and that's if they're lucky. But these plays are some 4 centuries old. Why hasn't the world gotten any better?
The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns. The Wilma Theatre's production of Macbeth runs through November 7th. The Opera Company of Philadelphia's Otello runs through October 15th.
You're listening to Creatively Speaking on WRTI.
Theater involves the efforts of a lot of people working together to make something happen. And WRTI is also a partnership of listeners, not just because your dollars support the programming you hear every day. Just as important as your dollars, we need to know what you think about what you hear, what we do well, what kind of difference we make in your life. Invest in WRTI online at WRTI.org or by calling 1-866-809-9784 and tell us what you think. Our reason for being is to provide an educational and cultural resource to you and the community, a place to go for music and information, and for the best radio available. The best way to let us know how WRTI is doing is for you to tell us by making a pledge, and the best time to tell us is when you're listening, like right now. So why not do it right now while you're thinking of it? Pledge online at WRTI.org or by phone at 1-866-809-9784.
Maybe you're thinking about becoming a new member of WRTI. If you listen to WRTI on your way to work and on your way home each day and an hour or two each weekend, you're probably listening to more than 700 hours a year. That's a lot of time, the length of about 350 movies or 200 football games or maybe a couple of hundred concerts. These things would cost you thousands of dollars, but we're just asking you to place a value on all of the WRTI programming you come to rely on and enjoy. Call 1-866-809-9784 to make your first-time gift, to renew, maybe to make an additional gift. Think about what WRTI means to you, put a value on that, and go to the phone. 1-866-809-9784. You know that WRTI is one of the best information and entertainment bargains you'll find anywhere. Put a value on that right now. 1-866-809-9784 or online at WRTI.org.
And when you call today, think about whether a contribution of $5, $10, $15 a month. Why not make a pledge at that level? We have a nice list of thank you gifts we'd like to send you. You can view all the thank you gifts online at WRTI.org or ask when you call 1-866-809-9784. Pledge to support the music you appreciate on WRTI. And if you like, ask for a thank you gift. The call is on us. 1-866-809-9784. The number again, 1-866-809-9784.
And you know, over the years, we've heard some pretty great radio stories from our listeners. Some of these stories have been funny, some touching, some inspirational, but they've all been incredibly real, and they've all been about the connection to the music. These stories are at the heart of listener-supported radio. They're our connection, the reason we, as a community of music lovers, care enough to support a station that brings you this beautiful and powerful music every day. Your contribution right now helps to ensure that this music keeps touching hearts, yours and future classical music lovers as well. Do you remember the last time you were really affected by a piece of music that you heard here? What was that worth? Put a value on that and all of the other occasions when this music changed the way you feel, changed your day. 1-866-809-9784. 1-866-809-9784 or WRTI.org.
Please call 1-866-809-9784 or make your contribution online at WRTI.org. You are the heart and soul of WRTI, and we value the role you play as listener, station advocate, and as contributor. Thank you for all you've done for WRTI, and thank you for what we hope you'll do right now. Please call 1-866-809-9784 or go online at WRTI.org.
With the popular success of the Twilight vampire novels and movies, as well as TV series from The Vampire Diaries to True Blood, vampires today are alluringly hot, and Philadelphia has its own connection to the most famous vampire of all. Now WRTI's Susan Lewis considers Dracula by Bram Stoker, whose notes for the late 19th century novel live on at the Rosenbach Museum and Library, now hosting its annual Dracula Festival.
A tall, dark figure in evening coat, with billowing black cape, his face oh so pale, his eyes gleaming red, his teeth, well, sharp, of course. Even people who have never read the original 1897 novel are likely to have some image of Count Dracula. Shaped by Hollywood adaptations and a new generation of vampire characters who may be romantic or even funny, like the Count on Sesame Street. Librarian Elizabeth Fuller of the Rosenbach Museum and Library says the original Dracula, however, was not someone you'd want to cuddle.
He has corpse-like breath. He has pointed animal teeth. He's got hairy palms. He's obviously evil.
Dracula came from the mind of Bram Stoker, who researched vampire lore, which dated back hundreds of years in Central and Eastern Europe. He also had at hand 19th century English vampire fiction. John Polidori's The Vampire, written in a storytelling contest, which also produced Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
There were also, in the middle of the century, a very popular pulp novel, Varney the Vampire. There was a short story later in the century called Carmilla. So there were vampires in English literature before Dracula.
But none endured like Bram Stoker's creation, a character that combined selected vampire lore with Stoker's own creative inventions. Although monstrous when fully revealed, Dracula appears first as a courtly and courteous older gentleman count from an ancient Transylvanian family. And yet,
he has an affinity for kind of creepy things like rats and wolves, which can obey his commands.
Assistant librarian Kathy Haas curated this year's Dracula exhibition, mounted in connection with the month-long festival at the Rosenbach. Dracula can scale the castle wall like an insect, or actually shapeshift into different forms, like a bat.
He can transform himself into different things, like mist, which means, of course, he can pop up anywhere at any time.
He sucks blood from beautiful bodies, but he also can get into people's thoughts.
He bites one of the main characters and actually also forces her to drink his own blood, and then she finds him invading her mind.
Scariest of all, although Dracula lives in a creepy castle in a remote area, he travels to London, where he moves about in daylight and can mingle in modern urban society.
The dreadful thing could really be on your doorstep. It's not safely someplace else.
Bram Stoker wrote Dracula in bits and pieces over 7 years. Rosenbach director Derek Dreyer says Stoker juggled writing with his busy job as manager of the Lyceum Theatre in Dublin, which kept him on the road a lot.
It was his job to make the travel arrangements for the Lyceum. So if they traveled to London or New York or Philadelphia, he had to make sure they had the hotels and the trains and all of the other bookings they would need. He became extremely adept at grabbing a few minutes here and there and making a few notes for his novel.
The notes include thoughts on background reading, outlines for chapters, timetables for travel, sometimes written on whatever paper was handy. They include, for example, a page of stationery from Philadelphia's Stratford Hotel, now the Bellevue. In 1970, the Rosenbach bought the notes, which have drawn visitors with a range of interests.
People have studied the notes for everything from Victorian conceptions of sexuality and disease to Freudian analysis to searching for clues about archaeological sites in Europe to several different works of fiction which have been based on the notes.
The complete collection of over 120 notes is now published in a facsimile volume. Aside from that compilation, this year's Dracula exhibition displays about 15 original pages, as well as several subsequent books which used the notes, including a sequel, co-written by Stoker's great-nephew, with characters and details that did not make it into the original story. As to those ideas that did make it into Bram Stoker's Dracula, the notes give a glimpse of how Stoker might have made those selections, from what characters should eat, to what trains they might catch, to what characteristics the vampire Count Dracula should have.
He started to make a list of these attributes. For example, that a vampire can't see himself in the mirror. Some of the attributes he let stand in the novel, other ones he crossed out. So when you see the author crossing things out on this original document, you get a sense of the genesis of the novel itself.
The story, written as a series of letters and journal entries, begins when young English solicitor Jonathan Harker travels to a castle in Transylvania to help Count Dracula buy property in England. Soon after he arrives,
Harker discovers that there's something very evil about the Count. He is effectively imprisoned in the castle. He meets several female vampires who threaten him and are warned off by the Count, who claims it for his own.
Harker escapes, but Dracula comes to England, where he stalks a number of characters, including Harker's fiancée, Mina, and her vivacious friend, Lucy, with whom three men are in love. Lucy begins sleepwalking and becomes increasingly pale and weak. Mysterious puncture wounds appear on her neck. Her friends, successful professionals, are at a loss to fight what they don't understand.
And the heroes use a lot of sort of modern technology, what was modern for the day. They use phonographs, they charter a steamboat. Mina knows how to write in shorthand, which was a pretty new thing at that time. But then also, they need help from somebody who understands the occult.
They bring in Professor Helsing from Amsterdam, who knows the usefulness of garlic and crosses, among other things. An alliance of the modern and traditional work together to battle the vampire. This story of human ingenuity pit against blood-sucking supernatural evil has been in print continuously since 1897, says Rosenbach director Derek Dreyer.
Some of the fascination we have with Dracula is this notion of the forbidden. It's about sexuality, and it's about immortality.
Sexuality, immortality, and fascination with technology, themes as compelling today as they were in 1897. Emily Parker, Rosenbach Director of Education, says there is more of a connection between Dracula and today's pop culture vampires than people realize.
I feel like the novel really started it all. Part of the role of the festival's events is to really prove that if you're interested in vampires, you'll be interested in Dracula and Bram Stoker.
The Dracula Festival includes writers' workshops, gallery talks, reading groups, and hands-on tours. The festival and exhibition run through October 31st at the Rosenbach Museum and Library in Center City, Philadelphia.
WRTI, Susan Lewis, and surprisingly few puncture marks on your neck, and you're not looking particularly pale this morning despite all of the attention you spent on vampires in the last week.
You're right. I've been reading Dracula every night, but I've come through it relatively unscathed. Right now, we're in our midst of our member fund drive, and we're asking you to add your voice to the thousands of members that support WRTI. We're asking you to make your pledge online at WRTI.org or by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Think about what the music and the arts programming means to you. Your contribution, added to the contributions of WRTI's other members, provides a significant part of our operating budget that brings you the great programming you rely on every day. Turn your love of music into a pledge. Online at WRTI.org or by phone at 1-866-809-9784.
And you know, it's not necessary for you to move out of your comfort zone to become a supporter of WRTI. Giving the right amount for you is the right thing to do, because it's the giving that counts, and not necessarily the size of the gift. Your financial gift combined with those of your fellow listeners, and together we're all able to enjoy the benefits of another year of programming from WRTI. Give the amount you're comfortable with, but give now. Call 1-866-809-9784, 1-866-809-9784, or donate online at WRTI.org.
Make your pledge now to help support all the great programming on WRTI. Your contribution in whatever amount you choose, $60, $75, more, whatever you choose will give us the resources we need to make things happen. Make things happen by pledging online at WRTI.org or by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Any pledge you make will support the programming you depend on. So why wait any longer to make your pledge of support? If you value the programming, if you listen, please make a pledge right now. Online at WRTI.org or by phone at 1-866-809-9784.
Most of your choices for entertainment come with a set fee. Think about what you pay for cable, internet access. Think about what you pay for subscriptions to concerts, to the theater. All of the things you spend money on every year. Well, WRTI is different. You decide that you want to contribute money to help pay for the music you love. And when you do decide to give, you also get to choose how much and how often. It's the fair system around, and it works because enough listeners do decide to give each year. With 20,000 members contributing each year at different levels of support, when you add them together, they're enough to keep WRTI on the air. Your gift, no matter what amount, makes a difference. We're asking you to decide right now to make your pledge of support, and you do that by making a phone call. 1-866-809-9784. Decide what level is comfortable for you and make the call. 1-866-809-9784, or you can go online to WRTI.org.
We're asking you as a listener to become a member. Your contribution today will provide essential support and ensure that WRTI will be here for you, for your neighbors, and for years to come. You decide the amount that fits your budget, and it will make a big difference at WRTI. Make your pledge online at WRTI.org or by phone at 1-866-809-9784. And thanks for your support.
And that's our program for this week. You can find an archive of past shows and subscribe to our podcast at our website, WRTI.org. Creatively Speaking's theme music is by Bill Jolly, orchestrated by Tim Ripchester, and performed by Symphony and C under music director Rossin Milnov. Eric Brannan is our associate producer. The show's executive producer is Jack Moore, and I'm Jim Cotter.
Creatively Speaking is a production of WRTI in Philadelphia. Support for the program comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.